all here yesterday? No. You, three of you were here. At any rate, what I did yesterday was to develop the thesis that God speaks through nature and use some Old Testament passages to indicate how in the Old Testament interpretations here and there among the prophets you get this interpretation that when we, the people, Israel, don't obey the commandments and worship God, have idols, that God speaks through nature. He says no to the people and what they're doing, but he says it, or she says it, through nature. That is, withholding the water or making things bloom if the mountains shout and so forth, so that there's a correlation. And you can read off of nature, off the creation, God's will or voice, or not easily, and it's a difficult concept. That's what I was trying to say, and then I was trying to make the point that we needed to listen to what was happening in nature as if it were God speaking to us and trying to say something about our very beings. That this is a real calling into question of what we're about, which causes this destruction. And so you'll recall that I try to make the point that we not only destroy nature and its created goodness, but we destroy the foundation for human existence. So that whether you think of nature as having a meaning and a being and a goodness in and of itself, which we frequently say, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful. and there's something there. Or you look at the rhythms and you see how life supports each other in all kinds of ways, destroys each other too. That's something good about it, apart from our use of it. But then there's the whole point of our using it. That's the first point. And the second point I tried to indicate is how broadly we are destroying the creation with global warming and all of the things we do to create carbon dioxide, all of the fossil fuel use, everything you buy creates carbon dioxide, which goes up, causes the global warming, causes blanket to form, which then causes rise in temperature, rise in the oceans, climate change, and all kinds of things we don't know about because we don't understand. And point being, we're in some peril to make those changes when apparently there's some disastrous effects, but we don't know. Case of ozone, we seem to know much better, the destruction of ozone due to the chlorofluorocarbons and a couple of other substances that we use in refrigeration and in air conditioning and to clean chips, destroying the ozone, and that will create harmful effects with plant growth and with human beings' life. Then I went on to point out some things about toxic waste, about the poisoning of food, about the poisoning of the water, about the poisoning of the air, about the destruction of forests, about the destruction of the species, thousands and thousands of species that take millions of years to evolve are just being eradicated. And the tropical forests seem to have the most of those. And that's where the most destruction is going on among forests. Land degradation, agricultural use of land such that the topsoil is eroded and it doesn't replace itself, whereas there are certain processes where it could replace itself. There seems to be a lack of care for what we've been given. Anyway, I try to develop that point, and I said today we take a little time to respond to those two points. And before we went on to talk about the interpretation of what this means and therefore what we can do. What is the fundamental issue involved And therefore, in response to that interpretation of what the issue is, how do we respond? How can we respond? So, I think we should spend a little time thinking about those first two points.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Whether that's real or whether it's not real. Or
seems overwhelming.
It is overwhelming, if you let it overwhelm you. I think partly the way not to let it overwhelm one is to get involved with it. I don't feel overwhelmed. I feel kind of challenged and excited about it. And I just got a letter from Sally Comer's son, the other son, and he said he got excited about stuff, and he was so pessimistic before he got up here, and now he's a little excited and he started to do something. Did you read the letter?
No, but I talked to him on the phone before.
Yeah, so that his whole attitude seems to have changed toward it, because he began to feel that he could do something, other people were interested in doing something, maybe together we could do something. No, it is overwhelming, though. It is really overwhelming to realize how almost unconsciously we have let this destruction occur, and without knowing a good deal of the time. Now I think people at least have been alerted to the fact that there are some problems, but for a long time we weren't aware of it. As I frequently say, we planted 14,000 trees on the farm we have in Michigan, and I wasn't even thinking consciously at all that had anything to do with carbon dioxide. That was only about 5 years ago. You know, I was so out of the conversation about all of these things and into something else that I didn't pay any attention. I didn't really pay any attention to this till I got here last September.
There may be a possibility of doing something when you think that when I was younger, cigarette smoking was such an accepted thing, and that there's actually been a change in attitude.
And it's growing. I mean, the change.
And the eating of meat as well.
Yeah, the eating of beef has fallen way down. Yeah. Pork, let's see, chickens and turkeys together are almost up to where beef is in terms of the percentage of meat that's eaten. We had a pig raiser here recently, and he had all those facts.
We went through Reynolds Tobacco Company back in North Carolina, saw them make cigarettes. So I asked them if it was making an impact on their sales. And they said, well, we're concentrating more on overseas sales. 26% are going overseas.
26%. That's just like our chlorofluorocarbons and our pesticides. Mm-hmm. We can't sell them here. We sell them overseas. And somehow there's no way we can control that.
Is the problem more
the
greed or more not knowing or understanding the consequences and interconnectedness of what we do?
I don't know. What do you think?
Both? Is it a combination?
If it's a company, it's profits. You can't sell it one place, you sell it another.
It's hard to say it's greed when the system works that way. And when the economic theory is a theory that's the way it should work.
It's a greedy system.
Well, it's a system, from my point of view, that doesn't have any internal regulation. The only regulation the system has is the decision of the person who buys something. The system itself has no internal regulation as to what is done, except the market, and that's the the interaction of other people who are seeking to make a profit affect your ability to make a profit, so that you've got to take them into account. But there's no regulating system with regard to what you do, except to do what brings you the bottom line that I can see. And I just got a new edition of my friend's book on economics, which is now being translated into all the Eastern European languages. And he says, some people, the environmentalists, will say that the pollution is the effect of the system. The system is at fault. He says, I will argue vociferously that that's not so. It's our decisions, you see. We make the decisions to do what we do with our money, and that is the only control, and that's the only control that this theory recognizes. And boy, I'm really struggling with how to deal with a system that so systematically avoids any responsibility for the effects of the system. Systematically avoids any responsibility for the effects of the system.
As I've listened to you on that, let's see, the system, but at least in some of the reading too, sometimes it gets, you know, labeled under major turmoil, mainly capitalism, and like, it's sort of making that the bad guy. And, in Europe, there's no mention of socialism or, it was interesting in one state, it was in a written thing, there's no mention of communism or socialism or fascism. It was just capitalism, you know. And so I think it's sort of, to me, it strikes like sort of a name calling or labeling in large generalities, and you're making it makes a bad guy out of that. And yet I think where the positive energy can go is the personal decisions of people. I mean, people, we've been talking about the changes that have been going on. Well, and I don't know the solution, like you're just saying, you know what. Because our system runs on a freedom, independence, and individual choice, and as long as we're going to try and maintain some kind of freedom and choice, then it's only going to somehow be the people taking responsibility and putting pressure on corporations and so on, where there are people that will. I mean that.
According to the system, actually. I've just written a paper on the economic theory and practice, so I'm just full of this. Socialism has done worse with the environment than we have.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That it's not a matter of having central organized decision making, it's over against the market making the decision that apparently determines whether or not we're going to take care of the environment.
Communism has done a miserable job.
Awful. It's worse.
You know, so controlled.
They have the wherewithal to make decisions regarding the future. See, according to the theory, and I just read this, we make decisions on the basis of what it costs us. Well, if the cost is nothing to us 100 years from now, I mean, the cost of 100 years from now is nothing to us personally, unless we have some empathy or sympathy for our great-grandchildren. And it's only that kind of cost that would possibly affect our decisions today, decisions that, in fact, will vastly change life 100 years from now. But if it doesn't cost us anything, that it doesn't enter into our rational decision-making about what's to our advantage according to this economic way of thinking. So that I'm very leery of, although this book that's on the table, For the Common Good, is a systematic critique of our economic system based upon the...
I guess that's where I heard some of that.
Yeah.
And I guess one of the things that seems to be looking for the right theory or the system, in other words, I don't think people make decisions from theory.
Well, some do and some don't. I mean, if you look at the conservative institutions that have developed, all of which come out of an ideology of freedom as self-initiation and maximize freedom and government out, you will find that there is an very definite ideology, and I just saw an advertisement for a school in Virginia, which is just, that's all it does, is
well, build upon... Well, I guess I'm coming from a different point of view in that, let's see, I think the rational functions are derivative functions, and from approaching it that way, you're not including the unconscious.
You mean they're all rationalizations?
I mean, there can be a lot of rationalizations. There are a lot of emotional needs, there are a lot of instinctual needs that are all operating, and the mind doesn't stay in charge of them all that well.
I wish, Roy, you would read that book on the psychology of, affluent?
Mm-hmm.
I just found it in the bookstore.
Yeah.
And because... it's an attempt to deal with the psychological needs we have, mm-hmm. which are met by the affluent society. It's a critique of the affluent, a so-called psychological critique of the affluent. And it's trying to deal with the needs that are served. Very interesting. I just read enough to...
that the one, the affluence of poverty?
Yeah.
That one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Any rate. Well, let me do a little systematic work to justify my being. The question is, how are we going to respond? And it's the meaning of the crying. And as I said yesterday, the meaning of the crying can be seen as a no to what we're doing. And then the question is, what's the character of the no? And much of the interpretation of the character of the no is that we are using means to promote economic growth, which are inefficient. And we can, by virtue of changing our technologies, for example, we can use renewable energy resources and cut our energy needs, we can become efficient in our use of energy and save 30-40% of our energy, and therefore we will save 30-40% of that carbon that's going up, so we deal with a large segment of the issue by virtue of a change in technology. That there is a kind of feeling, I think, among us, that there's always a kind of technological fix. And so I just read an article which critiques the state of the world, which some of you at least know about now, as a interpretation, because it says what they want is more with less resource. We get more with less resources. That's the meaning of efficiency. So that, everything okay?
Okay. You can stay right there.
All right. We get more with less, but it doesn't say anything about what we want. It just says we get more of what we want with less, so we ought to use less. And so the whole analysis is toward using less. And in that framework, we get a lot of talk about recycling, and we get a lot of talk about energy efficiency, and there's no question that we can get energy efficiency, and we could use less and get the same result. This is, I know this is going to be hard to see in this little, I got to turn it over. And turn it upside down. Yeah. It's always nice to have somebody who knows about these things. What the top line has, the energy used in Texas, the middle is the energy on the average in the United States, and the bottom line is the energy, electrical energy used in California. And the claim of the person who researched this is that in 76, California instituted two policies, one energy efficiency in appliances and energy efficiency in the building of new buildings. And the result is that they use half as much energy as Texans use per capita, and a quarter as much energy as the average person in the United States does. All because of government policy. It must have been Jerry Brown, I guess, 76. I'm trying to make it, yeah. Trying to make it Reagan, so it'll be something somebody can say that's good about Reagan. Among my friends, at least. But I think it was Jerry Brown. And all I'm trying to illustrate is that it is possible to follow the lead of the state of the world and reduce our energy, and therefore to reduce the threat of global warming. And this, again, is just support. I hope that's visible. The important thing is that far right column where the potential energy saving with new refrigerators and air conditioners and water heaters and ranges and so forth ranges from 87 to 59%, 50%, no, 56%, I guess, 56%. No, the lowest is 59%. Our electric range is 50. So you save at least 50% by getting efficient appliances. But the and one could do the same thing with cars. You could use energy much more efficiently for our cars if we would get efficient cars. And this is really, you can see the prototypes for cars go up to 98 miles per gallon. And I assume that we have no trouble at all getting 70 miles a gallon with our knowledge about technology. We can produce cars that would get 70 miles on the gallon. We've already got cars that get 52, 53, 57, and we could, got one more, and this is even harder to see. But what it says is that the Geo Metro, 53 in the city, 58 in the highway, Honda Civic, 49 and 52, Chevrolet Sprint, 46 and 50, Geo Metro, 46, 50, Pontiac Firefly, 46, 50, Volkswagen Jetta 3743. At any rate, there are cars. And the question is why we don't get them produced. And so the strategy would be to try to get them produced. And in other words, the strategy is to use energy efficiently. And so it'd be a matter of personal decision to get efficient. Whatever you get new, whatever you build new, even retrofit, you can retrofit and get a lot of efficiency in your home. More with less. There are all kinds of suggestions for use of fluorescent lights, and I've got some catalogs in the back table. That first group of stuff is all about energy-efficient goods. There's all kinds of places now where you can get energy-efficient lights, and so that water heaters, shower heads, unbelievable amount of water saved with shower heads, aerated shower heads, aerated faucets and shower heads, and any rate, stuff is there, and it's in the 128 suggestions, and so one could personally decide to begin to simply become energy efficient. And once one got one's home energy efficient, then one invites one's friends and neighbors in and has a kind of a house party. You know how these house parties go, where they sell stuff now. And this is actually suggested. I read this in a magazine. It was my idea that somebody had done this and showed all the recycling that she was doing, but all this energy efficient. We're trying to get Holden to put one of its buildings into this mode of life where everything is energy efficient. The appliances, the water, and I don't think I've got the toilets here, but I do have a magazine which one of the garbage magazines has the toilets in it, and here it is. And you can get gallons per flush. And the Pearl takes one cup. And most of these take 1/6. These are efficient, I think. All of them are efficient, comparatively. But this one takes one cup. There are all kinds of things you can do. You can put a dam. They have what they call a dam in it. You can put a plastic bottle filled with water in it. And you can put a brick in. The brick tends to disintegrate. But they're all, put a stone in. You can do all kinds of things to save the water. Now, cold water saves the water, and that gets us into the quantity of water we have. But in the showers and in the hot water faucet, you save your electricity or you save your gas, you save the energy, and therefore you save on the carbon emissions. So there are all kinds of reasons to do this sort of thing. And there's just a whole slew of things. Our dining room cut its electricity by 75% by installing. There are fluorescent lights in the dining room here. And they take, I think, there are 2 9-watt fluorescent bulbs in place of a 75-watt bulb. So that's 18 in the place of a 75-watt bulb. And there were about 1,000 watts in that dining room when we started. We haven't done anything with Jim, but there's just all kinds of stuff you can do to reduce the use of energy, reduce the use of oil, reduce the use of electricity, reduce the use of water. And they say I think I invented this, refuse, reuse, and recycle. I think the refuse means that you use less. So that isn't what they say. There are three R's there. One is reuse, one is recycle, the other is re-something. Anybody know? any rate, it can become ludicrous. I was trying to save my son's sock, so I mended the toe. And after I got, I spent a lot of time on that toe. And I've mended socks before. Then I discovered a great big hole in the heel, which is impossible. I spent all that time on that toe. I was feeling so virtuous. Oh, was I chagrined.
Well, yeah, how do we reduce the amount of materialism?
Yeah, but reduce in a sense, it's not getting more with less, it's just using less. Yeah, I mean, I think we ought to refuse, but refuse to buy, but
yeah.
But that gets into more life with less, which is another phase of this. That is, I do think that somehow, that's a second level, I think, is to, in all that gasoline, and all the, you know, the boats and the airplanes and all this, and it, somehow, one has to find a way of being in which there's more life without all of that. And that's a ticklish thing. You're the specialist on people redoing their lives, Roy. How will people get so transformed that they find meaning in staying in their local community, working on caring for the creation, instead of having to travel all over?
To reduce the travel and expenditure of energy, travel.
Yeah. But what's the motivation? How does our being somehow find meaning? See, all of our decisions are made in terms of attempted meanings, things that satisfy some of our so-called needs, and so that until there's a reinterpretation of what we need. And I read enough about these two books. There are two books back there I just picked up at the library today. I read enough, or skimmed them enough, to know that they both are saying that possessions, consumption, and the production of things, that's where our status and our meaning comes from, having things, producing things, using things, having been somewhere. I, with my jaundiced view, used to say people go places to take pictures to show people where they've been when they get home. And by they spend so much time taking pictures, they're never there. That's my jaundiced view. Well, you can tell I don't take a lot of pictures, although they say when I get a camera in my hand, I just go click, 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 click. So they don't let the camera get in my hand. At any rate, there's a lot of personal stuff. You create a garden, produce organic food, give it to your neighbors, have a market at church for organic food, just all kinds of stuff. And it's all in that 128 things. If you look through it, you begin to see the different things that you can do. You can see all these things that are more in the personal area. And I don't know, I really don't know how we cut the thread of the need to have more. And some people say people are dissatisfied unless they see the future as giving them more than they have today, that somehow their future has to look
bigger and better,
has to look like it, there'll be more in it. So that gives a kind of motivation for living and for working and for performing these functions in our system. That's Roy's challenge.
Maybe the for the church survey, a resource for that. Matthew Fox on the original blessing and the coming of cosmic Christ. And I say this because I think part of the problem for the church, or the church being an effective instrument in this area, is that for so many centuries and millenniums, it has been looking at the world and humankind in terms of the redemption, the sin and redemption model. And that has overshadowed the creation, the original blessing. And because, and I've been reading it, I'm pretty blown away with what's there. And a lot of the early church fathers, theological writers, you know, who were really into the earth and God working in the first article of the creed. It's just one little sentence, and then, you know, then it's a great big paragraph on the second article. And so we just brush right over the earth. And one of the things with me is that the earth has been around for billions of years, and man has only been on the face of the earth, you know, man, there's thousands of years.
Yes, this article I just read said, the bacteria are going to survive. There's some of them that even radiation is not going to affect.
Another gloomy way was, you know, that in terms of God's time and his creation, creating, like even the very first chapter in the book of Genesis, the earth was void and there was dark, falling waters, you know, that really could be the beginning of creation. But then there were millions and millions of years before humankind came on the scene. And there was no sin. You know, there was no sin at this point. There's no sin for millions and millions and billions of years. As sin appears, or as we thought of great thinkers, that original sin started when man, or humankind, came on the scene. And you know, so our whole focus is tended to be on as if there's something that went totally wrong right at that moment that man became a conscious being. And what hit me is, you know, sin is separation. Remember, that's one of our old definitions, separation from God.
And each other and our deeper
self. You
can
look at this from a more non-moralistic, non-judgmental way. To be separated is not necessarily a bad thing. This is when you are born and birthed into the way you separate from the mother. Even the Garden of Eden story is a rise, is a coming to consciousness. So sin is are becoming aware that we're separate and separate from God. So I think if we would get off of the horrible picture of humankind and see more of the original blessing.
I've read Fox, of course, and Barry too. Uh-huh. My problem with both of them is that they paint the picture just like you do, and it's kind of a negative picture of where we've been. And I think what we need to do, as I said the other day, is become thrice born, which is we need the second to be, we need to be freed from our guilt. God, we need to be free. You must understand better than anybody that we need to be free from the condemnation of the law in order that we can be born again into serving the creation. I think, so that I agree with what they say, but I think we're going to run into a lot of trouble if we put it that way.
I see the guilt as a different dimension. I see that as part of feeling of separation.
But we're guilty of separating from the creation too. And if you take the creation seriously, then we are separated from the creation. That's what's happening. We are separated. And we need to find a way to be united with each other and the creation.
Yeah. And becoming separated is part of our being conscious, also taking responsibility.
Part of our being.
To have the capacity to sin is it is a positive in the sense of it's human, and we have the ability to choose.
It's the prerequisite.
So now we have the possibility.
Yeah, it's a prerequisite of reunion, you see. It's a prerequisite of reunion with each other and with the creation. And so I'm trying to focus on that reunion with the creation, the beginning to look at the creation as a part of our being, and so that we have to take it into account. Now, we don't take each other into account, and I could go, I could give you the same dismal picture of reality socially that I gave you from nature in terms of what we're doing to each other and not doing for each other, and the dislocations of our families and of our human relations and of our national relations and all of that. But I think I've chosen to focus on this natural, because I think we can get at the human relations through the nature. If we can begin to take nature seriously, we may well take each other more seriously and care for each other more than we do.
One thing we are going for is, as Americans, we seem to be born with the idea that problems can be solved. The Americans are real problem solvers, and they may sometimes be the wrong problems. Yes, the point is that we have to make sure that they consider this an important problem to devote our energies to.
The problem is, from my point of view, is that we think we solve the problem by producing more.
Yeah.
And I think what nature is saying is that that isn't the way we solve our human problems, by just producing more stuff for everybody. That it hasn't solved we've got a quarter of our people who are in poverty, at least a fifth, and none of our growth, all our economic growth, has not dealt with that. Well, let me move on, because time is going and we'll be where we were yesterday, into the institutional. Our churches, schools, businesses, clubs, and so forth could become the foci for all kinds of changes, just like the individual. There can be collective attention to energy efficiency, to using recycled paper, to all kinds of policies in all these institutions to operate on the same level, more with less, more with less. All of our institutions could do that. And then we can move to the political framework, to the realm of the government, and the government can function in the same way, both institutionally, as some government agencies now declare that you will use recycled paper. And it seems to me it was Connecticut which recently decreed that any paper or any periodical or anybody that circulated more than 300,000 had to have 20% of their paper recycled by such and such a date, 50% by such and such a date. In other words, the governmental agencies can legislate about themselves and their attempt to get more with less. They can move into energy alternatives. They can put, Fretsch just put $200 million into research on hydrogen cars. Peugeot and Renault and the French government have a 7-year project to get hydrogen fuel cars. That's alternate energy source, a clean energy source. The government could legislate in all kinds of ways about pollutions and about the use of resources of water. They could, and energy tax could be put on, or carbon tax could be put on. Our governments could be the agencies for getting more with less and for getting less of these polluting effects. If we, the people, in our self-consciousness and in our own lives became sort of pressures on our congresspeople, organized pressure, so that and then there's a function for the churches, I think, beyond, way beyond all this more for less. And I think that's in the realm of the meaning structure.
Are there national organizations that are fairly well mobilized?
Well, there's a group. There's a group of religious people that are organized, and I just got a. I'm glad you brought that up. Just got a note from them. I don't even remember their name, but there is a series on public television beginning on October 4th, which takes the state of the world and for 10 weeks or 10 different times is going to do what they call Race to Save the Planet series. And this is the North American Conference on Religion and Ecology, and they just sent this notice. I have seen it other places too. October 4th is supposed to begin. What I do is call the public service station, public broadcasting, whatever they call it, whatever your station is, and ask them when they're putting on this series. Even if they hadn't planned to, it might put the pressure on to do it if enough people call. And Race to Save the Planet, and there's a study guide. I've sent for those. I don't have them. I sent for a group of them. And so there was this conference, and I don't know whether they're continuing or not. I don't know very much about it. I just know that they held a conference last year, and it looks like they're continuing to work as an organized group. But I don't know whether they have moved beyond more for less to more life with less, or toward really asking the questions about the meaning structure of our Western world.
I guess at this point there are really many organizations that are more focused on the environment.
There are probably 30 or 40 organizations that are focused. And in almost all of those how-to books that are on the they're on the table in the bookstore, and all those how-to books, if you look in the back, they will give you a list of the organizations. And if you look on my list, which some of you have, Nurturing the Church. I can give you one if you don't have one. I've got a lot of them here. You will find some recommendations.
Thank you.
Have you all got those? And if you didn't get, if you got 107 things, not 128. There's some things on the back table with 128. The last sheet, it's got the last 21 on it.
What's in the dining hall?
The dining hall has got 128. Yeah. At any rate, I think we have a great chance to put a little life, help a little life, help the spirit move in our churches and in ourselves. You know, I've got those bags back there. Your church group could make those bags. Did I suggest that last time? Your church group could make these grocery bags, and they'd find meaning in it, and you'd get a logo for it, and you know, there's just all kinds of things with a little creative imagination that you can get people involved in.
A lot of them are made for Lutheran women conventions, and now we just need to tell our women to use them for this.
Right. And you know, you're going to need 5 or 6 of them if you buy many groceries and have them around. And you can buy them all over. And those books back there on that corner show. This is from Safeway. Safeway actually sells this bag for $4. And it's not a very well constructed. It's very good because I've been hauling these books up and down for about 6 weeks in it, so you know it's got some strength. But the string should go around. The Lutheran women did a much better job. Safeway. They did the cheating, of course. It's a soft bag. I like the material. And actually, the practical matter is these handles are too long. If you go to Safeway, those handles are about the right size because they can fit it in and just fill up your bag like they do the other. But these handles are too long. When I took it in, they couldn't do it. So there's a little trick to the trade. Well, thank you for coming.
Yeah.